This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Copy and print.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 353 or 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad to be with you today. Hopefully you'll give us a call, talk with us at some time during the next hour. We're going to talk a little bit of Michigan football. We've got our good friend Mark Snyder on the line. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Earl?
Hey, doing good. And yeah, look, I know you got a tough one this weekend. That Purdue team has gotten pretty good over this year. I mean, you know, they're one of those teams that have built gradually, and now it looks like they might be ready to challenge for a championship. So how do you see this game with them?
Yeah, I think it's going to be tougher than anyone expected before the year. I think that everyone saw, you know, how many returning starters they have, but until you see them in action, you really don't know what you're in for. And I think that they've proven they can throw the ball, certainly. And, you know, and that's going to be a big challenge for Michigan. They got a good defensive front. They got some guys in the secondary, so there's a lot of different things going on there.
Yes, it should be a good game. Like you say, they've got a lot of players, and Michigan's growing their own players too. Hoke's got off to this good start, and that puts a lot of pressure on Michigan, especially they know the high expectation of their fans. But it seems like Hoke welcomes this kind of a strategy, doesn't he?
Yeah, Hoke doesn't care. I mean, that's fine with him. But Michigan hasn't played well on the road, and that's the biggest problem coming in here. I mean, they were able to beat Purdue last year because Fitz-Toussaint was so dominant in that game, and he was able to take the heat off of Denard. But, you know, they're going to be ready for that this year. So I think this is going to be quite a test for Michigan just to see, you know, where they're at.
Yes, and of course, this will be it will certainly give them a hint to win their division. I mean, everybody's looking at how the teams, and Michigan's one of the teams that favor to win their division, and that'll give teams a little bit of a look at maybe how in their division how they're going to go up against them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Purdue's another division, but you know, I think it's an opportunity for Michigan to see if they've learned things from that Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
The defense was really impressive, but the offense, you know, kept shooting itself in the foot with all of Denard Robinson's turnovers. Michigan, they moved the ball in that game against Notre Dame enough to score some points. They just couldn't get it in the end zone. So I think that'll be a good test to see how much progress they made.
Yes, and do you see at this time, do you see any help for Denard? You know, we know that he's there basically the whole offense, but how much help do you think they'll get from some of the other players help that offense go?
Well, they need Toussaint to play better. They need him to rush for 100 yards. They need to have someone offsetting Denard, or else the defenses are going to continue to focus him and put all the pressure on him, and then he's going to obviously make mistakes. You know, and he doesn't deal well with some of the pressure, or at least recently hasn't, especially on the road games. So I think that's something they need some running back help, and if he can get the ball to those receivers in space, they've proven this year that they can do things with it, that he's got to get them the ball, Devin Gardner, tight end Devin Funchess, Roy Roundtree, and so they can see. I mean, this is a potentially explosive offense. The question is just whether the ball can get in the hands of the people who can make it that way other than Denard.
Yes. Do you think that Denard is a better passer this year than he was last year? I've been having this debate with a lot of our colleagues and stuff. I think he's a better passer than he was last year, but a lot of people don't think he is. What's your opinion, since you're closer and you see him pretty regularly?
Well, I guess it's what your definition of passer is. I think as a passer, as a thrower, I think he's more solid. I think he's probably more accurate. I think he's got some better weapons. But as a decision maker, the Notre Dame game reminded that, you know, he still has a long way to go. When he's under pressure, he doesn't take sacks because he's got to learn that sometimes that's a better move. Even if it means a punt, he doesn't throw the ball away nearly as much as he should. And he tried to force too many balls in there. I mean, I think the maturing part of a passing quarterback is someone who can make the right decision at the right time, even if it doesn't necessarily reflect well on, you know, moving the ball downfield.
What when you look at him going to the next level, do you see him basically going to receiver to try to be a receiver or one of these all purpose players? What do you see him? Do you see him them maybe drafting him as a QB and trying to make him a QB at the next level?
No, I think that he'll be some type of other position. Yeah, either kick returner, which he hasn't done in Michigan because they're afraid he's going to get injured. But you'd think he'd be a pretty good kick returner, or a receiver hybrid, something like that. But he has that ability to play quarterback too. And with some teams having some wildcat packages or just being creative in different ways, there may be a role for him occasionally quarterback.
And other thing, hopefully, I'm assuming he's going to get a chance to do that, and hopefully he'll excel whichever thing he does at the next level. But we know he's very fast, and that speed will help him go a long, long way. That speed kills, as we know in the game, Mark. So with the kind of speed that he has, it's almost logical to say that he'll probably be a decent receiver if he can catch the ball.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he hasn't played defense, but I mean, as a defensive back, and maybe a possibility there too. He's athletic enough. I think there's a lot of different areas that Denard could do things. And you look at a career like Antoine Randall-Al or Hines Ward, maybe a little more physical than Denard is, but I mean, Antoine Randall-Al, I guess, may be a great comparison. He had an extended NFL career, and he was able to be a productive player. I mean, was he going to be an elite player? I don't know about that, but I think there's a role for guys like Denard, definitely. I mean, and I think that as we've seen with the spread quarterbacks, there's even the ones in the NFL, there's some inconsistency, even with Cam Newton. But Cam Newton is bigger, is a lot bigger than Denard. And Michael Vick even is a couple inches bigger than Denard. So, those guys have succeeded, and there's a place, but those guys were all both better passers even than Denard was.
Hey, how much do you think the defense needs to improve to help Michigan be successful this year?
I think the defense made a big stride against Notre Dame. I mean, they were very impressive against Notre Dame. The Irish only had one touchdown in the game, and Michigan's defense kept them in the game. They need to have more sacks. They need to finish plays, and they need to get more turnovers. And I think that those are things that every defense does. But this is a defense that is capable of those things. They just need to produce them.
Yeah, it sounds like Michigan and Michigan State's defenses are a lot alike.
Well, I think Michigan State's defense may have a little more talent than Michigan's defense. And they know that they have a dominant playmaker or two, especially, having the one with William Golston. The question is, Michigan can find a guy, maybe not on that level, but someone who's scary enough that offenses have to plan and stay away from.
Yes. Now, the Michigan-Purdue game is at 4 o'clock, right? Is that right, coming up on Saturday?
Yep.
Yeah, because it was at first going to be a night game, wasn't it?
No, I don't think they ever said that, but I think they've always said, 4 o'clock is later than most games are. It's to the 3:30 window, kickoff, and it's not at night. But I think that it's a kind of an unusual time for the game for sure.
Oh, yes, and how would you say about the Michigan special teams? How good are they, or not that good?
Well, I think it's been really hit and miss this year. I don't think there's been anything catastrophic. They haven't gotten returned on for a touchdown or anything to that effect, or any block kicks, but I think that they haven't produced. I mean, the field goal kicking has been fine. The punting has been decent with moments where it's spiked up and been very good, but I think just average. And I think that the return game, Dennis Norfleet is the freshman kick returner, and he's fearless, and he'll get up there, and he's had some good returns, but he still hasn't broken that long one. And until I think that threat is always there, and when he does, then the special teams will leap up and make a big difference. But I think that they need to pull off a return to really change a game. And I think the Norfleet's the guy who can do that. You need to actually see it happen in a game, not just in practice.
Yes, that's obviously key. They're going to have something, or hopefully someone like Norfleet can do that for them. When you look at the whole overall, when you look at the whole Michigan team, we know that everyone knows they've got the dynamic quarterback who's been their leader for the last few years. With that in mind, when you look at everything else they do, you say they need to sort of do like Michigan State. Receivers need to catch the ball, hold on to him. If he can hit them more in the hands, and they got to improve the running game. It really seems a lot like these two teams really mirror each other.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I think Michigan has the receivers who are explosive, and you've seen that more from them than you have, you know, from Michigan State this year. Michigan State has that outstanding tailback, you know, who can carry the load, and Fitz Toussaint hasn't proven he can do that. I think that there are some similarities. I guess I can see that, but I think that having Denard Robinson at quarterback, even with the mistakes he made against Notre Dame, I think that his experience makes a big difference, and his explosiveness over Andrew Maxwell. So if we're going to go position by position, I think that that's the thing that, you know, is a little bit unique.
How is the depth coming? I know Michigan's playing a lot of young players and a lot of freshmen. So do they have that much depth, or are they still trying to develop depth?
Well, I think that the depth is those freshmen and those guys, and I think that that's, especially on defense, that's where it's been kind of a unique situation. Some of those players have been the explosive ones, the younger players have given that explosion, and the older players have just been the ones who have been solid and, you know, filling their roles. So I think that if they can, those guys can get comfortable with their rotations, there can be depth by the end of the year. But that's the thing about Michigan, and as the defense emerged in the last game, proving that it has some capability to be a much improved defense, this is a Michigan team that has the potential to win the Big Ten, I think, and I still believe that, but I think it's just the case of how much they can evolve within the season. You know, I think that they've been really consistent in all different areas throughout the first four games, and they need to find their stride. I mean, they have potential on both sides of the ball to play with the best teams in the Big Ten, but they haven't proven yet that they're capable of that for one whole game on either side of the ball.
Yes, when how long would you say when you're playing freshmen that they'll develop and you won't be calling them freshmen anymore? 5 or 6 games, half the season, or do you think all of them have to go through a whole season?
Brady Hoke said the other day that he thinks it'll be game nine is kind of when they hit that wall, especially the freshman defenders. I don't know. It seems kind of late in the year for me.
Yeah, me too.
They're pretty physical. But I think that, you know, whatever impact you can get out of them, and that's why none of them, except for maybe tight end, have been given a position exclusively and said just go with it, none of the true freshmen, because I think they know that wall is coming, and they want them to be able to handle that. I mean, last year, Michigan put a lot of faith in the freshman linebacker Desmond Morgan and freshman quarterback Blake Countess, but I think they were the exceptions. I think that, you know, these true freshmen, they want to bring them along slowly, and if everyone could be fresh, to use an odd expression, I guess, here, but I think to be fresh that way and to have some energy going into late in the season, especially with as injured as this Michigan team has been early in the year, it's a situation where they're trying to balance everything, and they want to be ready for the Big Ten season. And now Michigan's going to have to play 8 games straight through, and that's going to be something that they've taken into consideration as well.
Wow. So, yeah, they've got a tough road ahead of them, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the schedule is going to be pretty daunting for them. They play, you know, Purdue is obviously a harder game than it was anticipated, at Nebraska and at Ohio State, who could be the two best teams in the league. You know, those are going to be challenging games. All three of those are on the road. There's going to be, and then they get Michigan State at home. So there's a lot of huge games looming for Michigan, and they don't have anything under their belt yet. So I think that there's a lot more out there, but, you know, get some wins in those games, and your perception changes totally as well.
Yeah, Mark, before I let you go, one more question for you. How do you see the Big Ten right now? How do you see the pluses, the big teams, and is anybody disappointed you yet?
I don't know if anyone's disappointed yet. I mean, I think that it'll be interesting to see how these teams play against each other. I think the Michigan State game against Ohio State last weekend and the Nebraska-Wisconsin game were perfect examples. Those are all considered to be elite teams in this league, and they played, you know, each other within a field goal. I mean, within a couple points, and I think that that's how a lot of the season is going to go. You know, whether it's, you know, a team limping, two teams limping around, or two teams excelling, I think that they're going to be close. And it's, in the end, it's not going to be, you know, maybe one team that was dominant the whole year. It's going to be whoever caught the breaks on that day, had the game at home, and really made the plays to win the games in the end, which makes for an interesting year when things are going to come down to, you know, a field goal year, extra point there, or something like that.
Okay. Hey, Mark, I want to thank you for joining me, and we'll be talking in the next few weeks because we know Michigan State will be coming up, so we'll talk probably around that game.
Sounds great, Earl.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you later, buddy. Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye. And that's Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Republican Chris Christie promised a game changer in this first presidential debate.
This whole race is going to be turned upside down.
The New Jersey governor on CBS. I'm Lynn Neary. After the debate, what moment stood out to you? Plus, Juno Diaz on his $500,000 genius grant. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl with a weather forecast. A high in the mid-70s and mostly sunny today. Tonight, the low 48 with rain and a chance of thunderstorms. Tomorrow, partly sunny, isolated showers and a high of 58. Partly sunny with scattered rain on Saturday, the high 52.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And if you want a chance to win tickets to the first hockey game, give us a call at 881-4780, 881-4780, for your chance to win tickets to Michigan State hockey right here on AM 870 WKAR. And that's our first game. It's an exhibition game, and it's coming up on Monday. So, boy, I'm having trouble today. I've given my producer a couple of wrong numbers. We'll get Terry Fitzwater on real soon. We'll get him on. So we're going to talk some auto racing with him. I guess this is one of those days. So anyway, we'll talk auto racing coming up. Brad Keselowski, who's from the state of Michigan, is the leader in the NASCAR championship racing series right now. He's at the top of the leaderboard, and he's trying to hold off Tony Stewart and all the other big time drivers. And he's in a strong position and is doing quite well. So, but you can give us a call, talk about that, and talk about anything else going on in the world of sports at 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. But more importantly, we want you to spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. And you know Michigan State plays Indiana this weekend, and that should be... It should be a good game for Michigan State, in all honesty. They should win that one, and hopefully pretty easily. That's been the problem because they haven't scored many runs lately, and they've got to score to get some points. So if they can do that, the offense comes alive, then they'll be ready if the offense can come alive and they can score some points. So that's a big problem for Michigan State. They have been a lack of scoring points in some of these games. I mean, they only scored 13 against Boise State. Against Central Michigan, that was their best game. They scored 41, but they only scored 17 against Notre Dame. They just scored 3 points, and then they scored only 7 points against the Eastern Michigan, and then they scored 16 points against Ohio State. So they just haven't been putting many points on the board, and everybody's, you know, it's no secret, everybody's going to jam the box, make them pass the ball until they can show it that they can pass it adequately, and they can have some success in the passing game. Of course, that'll open up the running game, and that'll open up the whole game. You know, it almost doesn't matter whether the run opens up the pass or the pass opens up the run. They all work hand in hand. And so if they can start to open up that passing game with running, that'll certainly help other dimensions of this offense. So hopefully we'll see that'll happen, that they'll open up the other parts of the offense, and hopefully they really need the passing game to come on, because everybody's going to try to shut them down by stopping the run, and they're going to have to you know, rely more on Le'Veon Bell. So they want him to be successful on the ground. But, you know, that's the hole they've gotten themselves in this year. You know, they're trying to rely on the running game and on the passing game as well. They really thought they would be better passers this year. That's what happened. They thought Michigan State really thought they were going to have a good passing attack from everything they seen last spring. And, you know, and then over during the fall, they really thought that they had a good passing attack and they were going to see some good passers. That's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk a little sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Because, you know, we're trying to... let's see. We got to go to the phones. We've got Mike on the line from East Lansing. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, Earl. How you doing today?
Okay.
Good. One of the things I've went to all the games and, you know, and one thing I haven't seen on the offense, you know, is I don't think I've seen a reverse. I don't think I've seen a bubble screen. I know I haven't seen the flea flicker. I haven't seen too many slants. You know, that's quick five and out slant towards the middle. It just seems they keep using the side of the field and not really utilizing a lot of the middle of the field.
Well, they can't. As you know, they've been seeing 8 and 9 man fronts all the time, so they can't. A lot of those things you're saying, they can't do. I mean, unless you want them to try to force it, and if you try to force it most times, you're calling for a fumble or a pick or somewhat. So they're just in a bad situation because they can't complete passes down the field. They've got to get to the point where they can complete passes, like you say, in the middle of the field or either on the outside. But they've got to be able to get some guys open 10 to 15 yards down the line, and then they've got to catch the ball. I mean, it's that simple. Sometimes, sooner or later, they've got to catch the ball.
Well, sometimes the ball just hits them in a bad spot, like between the numbers or in the hands.
Yep.
Yep. They can't, you know, they're dropping it, and it's not just one. It's kind of been all of them, except
right.
Mumphrey's been coming along. I believe that's the one. He's been coming along okay, and then, well, they made that change with, I think, was it Burbridge?
Yeah, he's going to start this week.
I mean, we haven't seen him, so until we see him, you really can't rate him.
Yep.
And another thing I haven't seen, Maxwell's got to run once in a while. I mean, Cousins didn't do it, you know, a lot, but
right.
He did once in a while. I mean, when you got an open field, sometimes you just got to take off and get the first down and get out of bounds or get down.
Oh, that's true. And because Maxwell is far more an athlete than what Kirk Cousins was. He can run better. You can see him sometime. You can see him in practice and such. But they don't have many running plays designed for him. But when a play breaks down and he can't find a receiver, he needs to start, you know, like you say, running for your life. And they say he's got good speed. We haven't seen it, but they say he's got good speed as well. So hopefully, you hope they don't get in those positions. But if you do get yourself in those positions, you got to try to make way and use your feet to get you out of trouble.
Yeah, even if it's just a quick 4 and 5, you know, when you're second down and 5, second down and 6, or third down and, you know, 5 or 6, mm-hmm. is a lot better than third down and 12.
That's true.
14. So, I don't know. That's just my observation.
Well, keep looking, and hopefully it's going to change. I mean, the coaches keep saying, you know, they tell us every week that things are going to change and get better, and, you know, they haven't really gotten that much better over a month in, and we're a month into the season now, going into game 5. So, I mean, if there's ever a game that can help turn Michigan State's season around and they can build some confidence, this is the game, because Indiana's not very good, and you got a team that isn't very good, so you really got to do something special this week, I would say, because the team they're playing just isn't that good.
Yeah, the next two are going to be, you know, shouldn't be too bad. Iowa's not a great team, but you know what? When Ohio State came in, all the other offenses were running over them pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though they were undefeated, they were still giving up a lot of yards, and all of a sudden they come in here and, boom, they're just like a wall.
Yep. Yeah, and that happens. But, yeah, Ohio State came in and they locked them down. They just couldn't get anything done on the air or on the ground, either way. I mean, Ohio State just did a very good job in here.
Okay, thanks a lot, Earl. Guys, have a great day, and the show's good as usual.
Okay, thank you, and Mike, and we'll talk to you a bit later on. And we were going to talk racing with Terry Fitzwater, but we can't seem to get a hold of him, so we'll keep trying, and maybe we'll get him on a little bit later on. And, you know, basketball training camp has opened up. I mean, yesterday the pros opened up. The Pistons opened up in training camp, and the pros are getting underway. College camps are opening up relatively very soon, and they'll be getting underway. So we'll be talking a lot of basketball here in the very near future with the camps opening up, teams getting ready to play. The Pistons announced they're going to be playing a game in England in January. So they're going to have a regular season game in New England in January. So that's just one of the things. So with basketball getting started, and of course football is in the middle of the season. It's going strong, and we've got the NASCAR championship is going on. They've got they've ran four races. They've got six races to go. So right now, let's go back to the phones, and we've got Victor on the line. Victor, how you doing, buddy?
How you doing?
Hey, okay.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, but not mine.
Oh.
Hey, what do you like in the Lions game this week?
Boy, I mean, that's you know, the Lions, well, thank goodness they don't have to play this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're on the bye this week.
Yeah, they got to play.
Yeah.
They got to play a game where they get together and figure out whether or not they want to be a team or chumps. Is what they got to play. They got to get together instead of going on vacation, playing golf, and chasing all their girlfriends around the parking lot. They need to get together and find out whether they're going to be a team or whether they're going to, you know, like be the Lions of old.
Well, you know, I don't think they're going to be the Lions of old, but what's happening is that every team that plays the Lions now, they come in ready to play. Before they got good and made the playoffs last year, nobody took the Lions seriously, and now teams are taking them seriously. They're preparing better for them, and so that's making it a lot tougher for the Lions because they've got to adjust to teams playing better and teams not, you know, just coming in and hoping that they can play a half and get away with it and win a game. They've got to play from the whole game now. They don't have the luxury.
Earl, I understand where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
but here's the thing that needs to change: the Lions aren't taking the Lions seriously.
Yeah, that might be.
You know what? We have the talent and stuff to be what we want to be, and that's one of the elite teams in the league. But guess what? They are not living up to their potential. Why? Because they don't know how to execute. People drop the ball. Remember, special teams. You know, ain't no excuse to give up two, like a kickoff return and you know, punt return touchdowns for long yardage.
Well, you know, the
and, you know, if Detroit had the weapons to return the favor, okay, that might be something different.
Yeah, but they don't have the weapons. It's just like you said, Vic, they just don't have the weapons on offense, or especially on defense. The defensive backfield has been very porous all year long.
How many years has that been? That seems to be a pretty consistent over the
And it doesn't look like it's going to.
Way back in the days when we had like Lem Barney and Charlie Sanders, and you know, we were decent then. But you know, for the last number of years, that's a area of the Lions team that hasn't been addressed and probably won't be addressed until I turn 90. You know? Now, I appreciate you taking my call, and I really hope I do add something to your show, because you certainly
you
add
do.
Something to my day when I'm listening to you, man.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are awesome. I wish you nothing but the best.
Hey, thanks a lot, Vic. Hey, we'll talk to you later, buddy.
You bet. You can count on it.
Okay, thank you. That's Victor from Lions talking about Lions, and a little bit frustrated with the Lions because he thinks most people in the state of Michigan think the Lions should be better. And I think this should be better. But, boy, you know, they've got some tough obstacles to overcome. You know, giving up the first team in NFL history to give up back-to-back punts and kickoff on 2 weeks in a row. Never happened in the history of the NFL before until this week. So we know that they're going to try to shore up that defense and that special teams, the kickoff and punt returns. They're going to try to get those ready to play. But those are some tough options, that's for sure. Hey, so give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.com. www.tcu.org and give us a call. So if you want a chance to win tickets, you can win win tickets for MSU and MSU hockey game. The first game is on Monday, and it's against Windsor, and that's for two games from on Windsor. Let's go to the phones, and let's check in with Jody. Jody, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Earl?
Okay.
Good, good. Man, I just wanted to agree with what Victor was saying, is that you do bring a lot of joy and some positives to people's day. You know, your show at 1 o'clock is something that, you know, a lot of us look forward to listening to and listening to you, and we have. So, you know, I just wanted to give you some kudos on that first.
Well, thank you.
You know, because I go back with you for a
long time. Yeah, that's right. We don't have to tell the folks the gory details.
Yeah. Oh, man, I don't even want to think who the president was. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know, as far as things will get better Saturday, because Indiana is, you know, is a ready-made opponent after two tough.
Yeah, they're a dog, and, you know, and you're ready. They're ready to get spanked. Hopefully so. I mean, Indiana, I think they might give them a little bit of a game, give them a game, you know, maybe for a half, something like that. But they should. I mean, the thing with Michigan State is they just haven't put any points on the board against against the mediocre teams. And since Indiana's definitely a mediocre team, they should be able to put some points on the board, shouldn't they?
Yeah, you think so, but you know what the thing is that it's, you know, young fellas, it's catching the ball, it's execution.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing more. It's not rocket scientists, and it's not, you know, heart surgery. You know, we're not saving lives. We're just making blocks and, holding the ball, tucking the ball in, knowing you're going to get hit, you know. So, I mean, we've seen it through the years and, you know, have done it. So, you know, and people probably, shook their heads at us when we were, dropping passes and missing blocks and all that. But, you know, as you look at it now, and now you're older and you know everything, it's just a matter of, you'd like to see the kids progress. And, you know, but what I wanted to really talk about it is that, too, when they're new young kids starting off, sometimes, you know, they're getting starting for the first time, and now they're playing, you know, you're replacing Martin and Cunningham with some younger guys, and maybe they're worried about running the proper right route,
right,
doing the proper reads, and forgetting the most important part, you know, which is securing the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like a sales comp organization that can market everything, but the salespeople don't know how to sell.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So, I mean, sometimes we get a little confused in what the objectives actually are. You know, young buck is to hold on to the ball, lineman is to make the blocks, it's to secure the guy when you tackle him, you know, it's to wrap him up and don't try to bump him down, wrap him up, drive through him, and, you know, those things. So, you know, it's a very simple game, you know. And, you know, the guy talked about reverses and all that, but if you got eight in the box, it is kind of hard to run screens and draws.
Yep.
Because everybody's playing the run, but how do you stop that? Your wide receivers start catching the ball.
Exactly.
You know, once they catch the ball and you spread the field, now guys got to worry about getting beat deep, and now you can work everything under, and now draws and screens open up. And also, you know, coaches have their offensive plans, and, you know, and a lot of times, you know, I was told this a long time ago by the late Dr. Ratcliffe. I'm going to give him Doc Ratcliffe some kudos. He said, everybody, you know, we're a copycat kind of world, and when somebody thinks out of the box, they're a genius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's
when,
true.
When Buddy Ryan was rushing everybody, when guys were, you know, playing the 3-4s and, the 4-3s, and Buddy Ryan was rushing 7 or 8 guys, all at once he was a genius. You know, now we look at it in the single wing. You know, some teams go back to running the single wing from the 40s.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the running back behind, you know, the hiking the ball to a running back or the Tebow. You know, that's just the 40s, you know. Davis and Blanchard, man, with Army back in those days, you know, mm-hmm. what we used to read about when we were younger. So, you know, it all goes, you know, and it goes in cycles, and, you know, and the game is, you know, it's no different. We've just put new terminology on it to make the coaches think that they make them sound like they know it all, you know, everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they all, every, when people like to make you think that, boy, they've come up with something new, but no, everything's been done in football. I mean, we haven't seen anything new, maybe 50 to 100 years. I mean, it's all basically the same thing. You know, the talent is better. I mean, some and the talent overall is better than what it was 30 or 40 years ago. The game is so much faster, even on the college level. As you know, the game is just a lot faster game because you got better people that are more and better prepared playing the game.
And, you know, also what you have is you guys so big, the bigger guys are taking up so much space on the field.
Yes.
Because I don't want to say those linemen are quicker than I was because those guys can't run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no offense to the big fellas, but I like to race one of them when I was, you know, playing the guard. I was 70 pounds smaller, but, you know, I'm sure I could run. But, you know, there's so many, the field is still same size, and the guys are so swollen now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think about it, man, you know, you see a lot of bellies on them doggone fields.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, whether it's the pros, college, and I ain't never seen a shoe, man. Our coach would have had us running at midnight getting those bellies off of us.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know? So, I mean, I'm just calling it like it, you know, like as my mother used to say, like a TIE is, you know, the kids, you know. So, I mean, as I see it all, you know, it's true. Kids can't practice as much. You know, what, when last year, a couple years ago, when Rich Rod was at Michigan, they turned around and reported him for practicing too much?
Yep.
Come on. You know, practicing too much? And you getting a $30,000, $40,000 scholarship a year or whatever they paying a year, and somebody's going to tell me I'm practicing you too much? We've lost our minds.
Yeah, we have. We're trying to make the game softer.
That's exactly it. We become such, you know, and we wonder why. You know, we're not, you know, education is dropping, this is happening. We've really started, you know, and people, mothers and other people may not like that I say that, but I will just say it, and I will say it till, you know, we just, you know, you have to go back and, you know, you have to, you know, you have to prepare and you have to work to get things. Nothing's going to be given to you.
That's right.
You know, you got to put your work in. But then again, I've talked old man talk long enough. I'll let the young folks come in and tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay. Hey,
all right.
Good
Earl.
Talking with you, Jody.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And so 42 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock, stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
After her husband was killed in Iraq, Melissa Loveless Boynton struggled for the right words to help their daughter grieve.
I told her that Daddy was in heaven. He got a big boo-boo on his shoulder. And she finally, I think, grasped the concept that he wasn't going to come home.
I'm Lynn Neary, Kids and Grief. Next, Talk the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
A mostly sunny day with a high of 75 degrees today. Tonight, rain moving in and we could get thunderstorms too, a low of 48. Tomorrow, partly sunny with isolated showers and a high of 58. Partly sunny Saturday, scattered rain, the high 52. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we want you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, and talk sports with us. Right now, let's bring in our good friend Terry Futzwater and talk a little bit of auto racing. Terry, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you?
Hey, doing good. Yeah, we wanted to talk together. As you were telling me the other day, Brad Keselowski, who we know is leading in the NASCAR in the sprint for the championship, is doing very well. So what's been the key for him to be so successful this year?
Well, I think since he's hooked up with his new crew chief a year ago, things have it's like the light bulb went off for Brad. Since that time, he's won a number of races. He's won five times this year. He's won two of the first three chase races, and he's going to a track this week in Talladega where he's won at before. So I think that combination of his crew having confidence in his crew chief, good equipment that is set up just right for him, and I think that Brad's got a quiet confidence and air about him that sets him apart from some of the other younger drivers. I think he's just feeling the confidence right now that, hey, I can win this thing, and I am going to win this thing.
Yeah, because I was reading how, you know, he says he loves being in the lead as opposed to sneaking up on somebody, you know, coming from behind to win a race. He says, hey, if I got the lead, I want to keep the lead. I'm going to stand in front. He says, why? He said he doesn't understand the concept of trying to, you know, just hang around in the back of a race and then try to pass him at the end. He says, I just don't get that. And that's a very good attitude to have, isn't it?
Well, it's a great attitude to have, one from an attitude standpoint, and two, from a practical standpoint, it makes more sense because in this era of NASCAR, with the aero push that these cars have when they're running in traffic, makes their cars a lot more unstable. So you want to be out front from a practical standpoint because driving in clean air, your cars go faster.
Hmm. That's something too. That's one thing about auto racing. I mean, it seems like the engine, how strong and how big the engine is, and just about every car has big strong engines. So therefore, the driver really becomes very important, doesn't he? Because he has to have a certain amount of skill to be successful. Because everybody's got about the same kind of engine, don't they?
Yeah, the engines are very, 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 very similar. And you're right, Earl. That's a good point. The driver makes a lot of difference. I also think that it's your crew chief, your team, who's putting the money into research, because one little minute change or something that, you know, and not that these guys cheat, God forbid that we'd call any NASCAR crew chiefs cheaters, but different things that they can do to the cars to make them more aerodynamically sound or give them a little bit better balance depending on which track they go to. That helps a lot. But is it any coincidence that when you look at the leaderboard, who do you see up there every week? You don't see the guys that have some ability that have won in their careers that are always, the start and stop, start and park guys. You see the Jimmy Johnsons. You see the Tony Stewarts, the Jeff Gordons, and the Kyle Busch, even though he's not having a great year, but he's still a top driver, and Michigan's own Brad Keselowski. It's no stranger to victory lane or to the top of the point standings that you see the best drivers always seem to congregate near the top of the leaderboard.
Yes, like I say, it's no coincidence, that's for sure. Brad Keselowski, I mean, the only thing, maybe it'd be a little surprising that he's such a young man, and he's moved up so fast. And used to be, in days gone by, Terry, when I was a young man, it was hard for young drivers to get a recognition, to get a car, and go out and get some races. But now it seems like it's a lot easier for the younger guys to get up to the NASCAR level, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Earl, when you and I were young, man, we were watching the chariot races at the Coliseum. Yeah, you're right. The difference in NASCAR now and NASCAR 20 years ago, it's completely different. It's a completely different beast. And the driver development series, before, if you could do some good wheeling around a racetrack, you could work your way up. Now you not only have to be able to wheel your way around the racetrack, but you better be able to bring a sponsor with you. And that's why some of the young guys that are coming in, you look at the Austin and Ty Dillons that are running in the trucks and nationwide. Well, hey, it's no secret that these guys are coming up to the Cup, but who do they got? They got a grandfather that's giving them great equipment. Now, these guys can drive, and they've been tutored well, but they're great drivers, but they also have great equipment. And that's the NASCAR of today. There's a lot of guys I see in the Midwest on a weekly basis that are great drivers, and matter of fact, last week at the last City 200 at Toledo, I saw a young driver, Terry Sinneker, just one of the most amazing comebacks in the last 20 laps of any race I've ever seen, how he came back to win that race. Terry Sinneker, yeah, does he have ability? Yeah, he's got a great lineage with his family, with his dad, Terry Sr., and Bob Sinneker. But is he going NASCAR racing? Probably not, because he's not bringing money to the table.
Yeah, now how good was racing this summer in the state of Michigan? I mean, they've had a lot of the race, a lot of the tracks had problems, economic problems. So how was the racing in Michigan this year?
Well, it depends on the track, Earl. But this year, I think 2007, 2000, and the summer of 2008, things were good. And then in 2009, 2010, things were really bad. And then in 2011, things seemed to stabilize for most of the tracks. This year, you see a lot of the tracks doing better. Now, Spartan Speedway in Lansing in our backyard had a decent year. They're very happy with what they did. But just to the south of them, Springport did not. And you look at some of the tracks that are over on the east side of the state in the Flint-Saginaw area, they're really suffering. Auto City and Dixie, two of the premier tracks on that side of the state, they had a tough year. But just south of them, Flat Rock, Toledo, just over the state line, they had great years. And then most of the people that I've talked to in the industry say that this year was a better year than last year. You look at a couple of tracks that You know, a couple tracks did not have great gears. Merritt Speedway, the owner up there, he tried to do a lot of different things, and unfortunately didn't work for him, so he's given the track back to the previous owner. So there are tracks that are booming. Tri-City, Crystal, Spartan had a good year. Flat Rock and Toledo had a great year. Berlin came back this year very strong. So in the state of Michigan, short track racing is doing good. But when we first started talking, Brad Keselowski, here's the NASCAR driver. He's leading the chase for the NASCAR championship. This summer, in August, he went back to Auto City. That's where Brad Keselowski started. He's a Michigan boy, started at Auto City. He went back there this summer, and I tell you what, it was one of the great moments of the racing summer, Earl. He went back to Auto City Speedway. He signed autographs for the huge crowd. He was only supposed to be there for 2 hours. They flew him in on a helicopter. He signed all the autographs, took all the pictures. Then he went out on the track, and he shook hands with all the veterans that were there that night. And then he took the mic, and he said, I'm so glad to be home. He goes, I'm not getting on that helicopter until this race is over. I'm going to be sitting up in the stands. I'm drinking beer with you fans. Come buy me one. And he went up in the stands and sat there and talked to people, had a couple beers. And I tell you what, for a town that was depressed as Flint and Saginaw are, to have a local boy come home who's done well and say, this is home. This is where I started. This is home for me and always will be. It was a big moment for that community, and it was a great moment for Brad Keselowski.
Yes, it was. So that was really special, and that was very good of him to do. We as we've talked before, a lot of racers don't do that for whatever reason. They don't get out and sign autographs for fans and such. And that was nice that he'd done that. And hopefully, I'd like to see. Wish more racers would get it. I know they've got a lot of commitments and such, but it would be nice if more racers would spend more time with the fans.
I agree, and that's what grew the sport. When you look at that, we talked about this before with Richard Petty and Bill Elliott and Terry Labonte and that generation of drivers as they came up and what they did to sign autographs for the fans. But like most major sports, as NASCAR blew up in popularity and intensity, the demands and the amount of money that came into sport, started, pulling the drivers in different directions. Where they'll still sign autographs more so maybe than other major sports, not as much as they used to. And they're insulated from the fans now, unlike what they were before. And I tell you what, there are some great guys out there. What I saw Brad do that night was cool. But you look at the Jeff Gordons and the Tony Stewarts of the world, nobody knows about this, but all the charity work, they're the top two guys in NASCAR. All the charity work they do behind the scenes, going to the hospitals, visiting the kids and stuff like that, that's great. And they don't want the publicity for it. But all we see is the guy signing autographs. And Brad Keselowski, what I was told, that when Roger Penske hired Brad, all he said is, what do you want me to do? How do I go line up the sponsor for us? What do you want me to do with the fans? And he was the one who specifically said, I want to go back to Auto City and make sure I get exposure to the people that I grew up with. And I tell you what, you don't hear that stuff very often.
Yeah, that's so true. Maybe one day, we can only hope that one day it'll come back and the fans will be like they used to be. I mean, they were so in touch with racing. And like you, I've always thought that the racing car fans were a little bit different from other fans of other sports. And the drivers were so friendly and so down to earth. And that's what it was really a good marriage. So hopefully they can get it back. Because now when we look at basketball, those players, you wouldn't hardly see some basketball players signing autographs for 3 or 4 hours or a couple hours even after a game. And football players, they're all the same. And plus today, as you know, everybody wants to be paid for a signature.
I know. And that, what happened to the humanity? They want to be idolized, but they don't want to be the role models anymore. Yeah. And it's like, there are guys. I mean, I think we're overgeneralizing, but there is that perception, and perception has become reality. It's, the fans are paying you millions and millions of dollars. If we don't show up, we don't watch, you're not getting anything. So the lack of, they'll play lip service to it, but the lack of where the rubber meets the road, where they actually come back and give something back, you don't see that very often, or not as much as you used to see, back back in our day when we were younger, and maybe we're just like the old men that when we were younger, oh, you young kids don't understand it anymore. But, yeah. You know, it is different. It really is.
Yeah. Hey, now, do you think Brad can win this cup? I mean, he's, like you say, he's got a couple of races already under his belt, a couple of victories. Do you think he can win it? Can he hold on and win it? Or you know, he doesn't have an insurmountable lead, but how many races would he have to win? Five or six or to win?
You know, he's already won two. There's seven races left. And, oh, he most certainly can win it, Earl. One of the tracks that he had not done well at was Dover, the Monster Mile. His average finish there coming into last week's race was 18th. And through strategy, driving ability, and some luck, some skill, you know, he found himself in victory lane. So now he's won two or three, taking the lead back for the chase. He's coming up to a good track. Yeah, there's some tracks out here that Brad Keselowski can do very well at. And, you know, they were talking that this was a Jimmy Johnson-Denny Hamlin duel to the end. Hey, you know, I think Brad would like to be the guy. Hey, if you're not paying attention to me, I'm going to blow by you guys. And, you know, when it comes to Miami at Homestead, you know, when they're giving me the trophy, you're going to say, what happened? You know, some people wonder what happened. Well, Brad Keselowski's going to be there every race. Yeah, I think he's going to win a couple more times in the next seven races because he's been that dominant. And I hope to heck he does, because it would be great to have a guy from Michigan win the NASCAR championship.
Yeah, it would be, and that would be just a lot of you know, extra publicity for the state of Michigan, for sure, because you know, racing has always been good here, even though a lot of people may not realize it. But Michigan's been a great state for auto racing, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been a great state. You know, going back to the days of Henry Ford and Gaston Chevrolet racing and winning that down at the Indianapolis 500. You look at some of the great drivers that have come out of the state, and then it. Even looking at guys like Gordon Johncock and Sam Sessions, who raced in the 60s and 70s, to you know, Scott Brayton, who won the pole for a couple of Indy 500s. And then you look at all the great drivers that are just short track. Now, see, Brad's a second-generation driver. His dad was a legend driving on the east side of the state. And so as Brad came up through the ranks, he had a dad that had always had a dream to go race at Indy or the Daytona 500, but didn't have the money to make it because he was raising a family. But he taught his son how to drive, and he taught his brother how to drive. And 2 years ago, both Keselowski boys were in the Daytona 500, and his dad, Bob, said, "Other than my son's winning the championship, that's the greatest thrill of my life."
And that's really special too, Terry.
Yeah. And it's the home of the auto industry to have a Michigan guy. You know, don't underestimate the General Motors, the Chevrolet, you know, the Chevy side of that, the Ford, you know, Dodge, which is getting out of it. But I mean, it's important for those manufacturers to be seen, because they don't want Toyota to win anything. They don't want Honda to come into the sport. They want to be seen as the dominant factors in car production and car technology, because the old thing, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. There's still a belief in some of that, and they want to do well. And then to have one of their local boys do well in the Dodge this year, and he's going to go to a Ford next year. If a local boy wins the championship, I guarantee you, a Ford Motor Company is going to spend millions promoting Brad Keselowski.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hey, before we let you go, Terry, I know we've covered just about everything we did with auto racing. Anything you want to add?
Well, you know, I guess, Errol, I just want to let everyone know that auto racing has made a comeback in the month of September. The short tracks in the Midwest did great. There was a great show over at Owosso Speedway this past weekend where they filled the place. There was a great show at Berlin a couple weeks ago. Toledo had a great race. They're going to run down in Anderson and Super Modified this weekend in the must-see Super Mod. Racing is good. It's solid. And if people want to keep up with it, Earl, here's a shameless plug for my publication. Okay. All you have to do is go online, www.midwestracingscene.com. You can find out what's going on in the world. You can get a subscription there. And we'd be happy to, you know, or send us an email. We'll be happy to talk to you if you have questions or need to find out what's going on. And you, my friend, I want to thank you for the time again. It's always great to talk sports with you. And go Miguel Cabrera, go Detroit Tigers, and let's bring a world championship and an MVP back to the team.
There you go. Hey, thanks a lot, Terry. And that's Terry Fitzwater talking sports with us. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870. WKAR East Lansing. Join us tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.